Accession number 11261, Reel 3.
Pavulovich, Reel 3.
Right.
So you had this reputation then as
well,
an
anti-communist. Well, I was, yes. So, but of course, you see, that obviously has got to my home district, so where I was there. And when the first detachment of the Shumtsi came to my village, I can't remember exactly the date, but it was sometime during that summer, they immediately sent for me. They sent the person who was, you know, the messenger at the local sort of, you know, a community center to find me and to fetch me. And of course, they already knew. The leader of that group was one of the communist leaders. He was a teacher. A few villages away from the same area. And I was interrogated. I was asked whether I was a member of this particular movement, whether I was what they call Ljotićevac. I'm ashamed to say that, but at the time I denied this. I said I'm not. Whether they accepted this or not, I'm not sure. But I was lucky in a way to get off with a very severe warning to watch my steps. Because if they heard anything else, that would be it. That would be the end of me. So obviously, it was a warning assigned to me. I knew at the time that already, you know, something was happening in other parts of the country where communists had become more aggressive. They have attacked a number of Germans. The number of Germans have been killed or wounded. And, of course, we had this atrocious reprisal ratio, 100 to 1 for a killed German and 50 for a wounded German. Now, those people were shot without any mercy, without questions. And there isn't even... I haven't had much evidence for this, but I have read in one place that for officers, German officers, the reprisal was as many as 500. Now, the hostages were already in their hands. I told you, they would take thousands of people and have them in this camp near Belgrade in Banjica. They would simply go and take so many. We need 100, 200, 500, take them out and shoot them. So they were not chasing. They were not. They didn't either have time or inclination to go and find the culprits. No. Right, you've done this. Some of your people have done it. These are the reprisals ratios or measures, and we're going to apply them. Or they would come to the village, or wherever the incident happened, they would simply surround it, everybody, kill them, burn the place, or take some into captivity. But in most cases, it was just shooting them there and then. And very often, they would be shooting many more than the required number to fulfill their reprisal quotas. So you can see this was the kind of situation that was becoming more desperate. The Germans didn't like any attacks on them. They expected full submission. The country was facing complete extermination, and they would have meant it, because when a number of such incidents unfavorable to them happened, and some of their people were killed or wounded, they were simply and they told this our representatives. There was a kind of representative there, sort of, you know, people had to have somebody to talk in the name of that enslaved nation. So they would be telling them, if you don't stop these things, we are going to let the Ustashes come into this part of Serbia You know what they're doing in Croatia, and they can do what they like. In fact, they did it even before the Germans had told them. They came, crossed over here, their temporary border or frontier, and they rounded up hundreds of people. They were taking them across the river to Croatia, and probably that would have been the end of them. Eventually, we managed to sort of stop that. Most of those people are... and then they said that we'll simply divide you between the Italians, the Ustashes, the Albanians, the Bulgarians, the Hungarians, and they can do what they like with you. None of them very friendly towards us. At this ratio of 200 for one killed German, we could have gone and killed, 2,000 Germans? And how many people would we have lost in reprisals? And how many more that wouldn't have been even counted? This was the kind of situation. And this was the situation when eventually General Nedić was persuaded, who was kept in sort of, house captivity. He had been a prisoner and then brought back, but then he was still a German prisoner. When he was persuaded by some of our leading people, we had still some people, university professors, some ex-politicians, and people who realized that there's severe consequences that would befall on our small and divided and threatened country. So Nedić agreed to form a kind of sort of provisional government. Well, it's not a government. I mean, you use it in quotes. But administration, really, to try and stop this massacre. Of course, in the meantime, as the communists have become even more aggressive, because they were enlisting more and more support, and people thought, yes, they were really now beginning to fight, and in one or two places they attacked the German garrisons, and they even liberated those places. At one time there was even collaboration with Mihailovic. Mihailovic and Tito worked together, and they managed to push the Germans from quite a considerable area, and the partisans formed the so-called the Republic of Užice. Užice was the center of the capital of the newly founded republic. They had a factory of ammunition there. And of course, this was done towards the end of October and beginning of November. Before this, there had been terrible massacres in a few places here, like Kragujevac and Kraljevo, where several thousand people were massacred. In Kragujevac, for example, so many people were needed to make up for the required numbers. I think there were 13 Germans killed and 16 wounded, or something like this. But it needed several thousand, 2,600, whatever it was, hostages to account for that massacre. So they didn't have enough people there. They even went to the secondary school and took, senior pupils with their teachers. Now the teachers, to their credit, offered to, go, instead of their pupils. But of course, the Germans took them all and massacred them. So there were these massacres in Kragujevac, there were massacres at Kraljevo, various others, smaller ones, not on that scale, but the worst was at Kragujevac, where several thousand, we think that something like 5,000 or 6,000 people were massacred, but although according to the quota, it should have been 2,300 or 2,600. I give that, I think it's somewhere mentioned in my book.
But where were you at this time? It's your history now. Yeah. We are interested.
I was just.
This is the background.
I was just.
Church,
I was telling you then. So you see, I knew about this because the message, the news was coming to us, but I was still in this sort of area, lying low, and watching my steps, just trying not to offend anybody. because I knew I was being watched, because during the night sometimes, you know, people would come, surround the house and shout, you know, threatening, or make threatening shouts at me. So they could have had me at any time. Then I was enlisted. Well, I'm more or less asked, or, well, I had no option, to join their sort of underground movement.
The partisans.
Or the local partisans. Now, what could you do there? You say no, because that would be the end anyway. So yes, I was taken on a few of their expeditions where they were going to various places and getting guns from them or whatever ammunition they had. On any of one of these, I was expecting to be one of the victims, but nothing happened. So it went on for several months. I don't think they had much time for this particular area. So they were, you know, organizing themselves elsewhere. So I was left in peace for some time. But one or two incidents happened that were very unpleasant. For example, at one time, because the Germans were not very happy about the unrest in this area, they allowed the Bulgarians to come over here to take that eastern part of Serbia, which included my home village. And of course the Bulgarians, what they did again, not much love lost between them and our population. They would come to various places, they would send their hundreds of soldiers, they would round up people in various villages. They would take a few from every group, usually the strongest, people likely to be the leaders or most intelligent and so on. And next day you would read in the papers, the Bulgarian army in their action in that particular area has killed 100 or 200 partisans. They were not partisans, they were ordinary, you know, peace-loving people just, you know, trying to, you know, to look after their families. Anyway, they came to my village in the same way, and they did exactly the same thing. They surrounded us all up, they held us in a corner, and they started interrogating one by one. I was one of those who was there. I was interrogated. I had a difficult job to convince them that I wasn't a communist. And my main argument was, I'm a theological student. And as you know, I can't be a theological student and also believe in an atheist system. They were not ready to believe me, but I think after some arguing, I managed to persuade them. So I wasn't one of those who was taken out, although they took a few people from my village, some close friends, and they were shot the following day or was night up in the mountains, and that was the last we saw them or heard of them. Anyway, this time I escaped, but then the local partisan leader, who was a shoemaker, and some others, somehow thought that I have got away because I have given some names. I have given some information to the Bulgarians about the local setup, because they were looking for him. So I was now in trouble again, and I was threatened. About that time, or soon after that, two people, again, what I thought were quite innocent people, you know, loving good life, womanizers, to a great extent, easygoing, not, you know, living at the other end of, towards the periphery of my village. We heard that they've been taken out and shot. We don't know why, what they've done, whether they've done anything.
By the partisans, was this?
Oh, yeah, by the partisans, yes. A day or two after this, I was in the communal center, or our cooperative shop, which was there, which was the meeting place, in a way. And this shoemaker, the local leader, was there. And, you know, he made a very pointed remarks, looking towards me, and said, so-and-so, referring to those two people who had just been shot, are up in the mountains picking strawberries. Soon somebody else will join them, looking at me. Well, I think that was a very clear message that if I stayed there much longer now, this was now the sort of getting towards the mid of, early summer, 1942. Now, I obviously was in their black books. No matter what I said or what I have done or haven't done, that would seem very likely end for me. So I took the hint. I think I understood the message. And the next day I packed. I just took a few small things and went to Svrljig, to the nearest little town, and gave myself up to the local police. Obviously, you know, all of us were suspected as partisans or crypto-partisans or sympathizers. And I was kept there 2 or 3 days. Some interrogations took place. Again, I told my story as it is. I mean, you know, there's no need to embellish it or add much to it. It's just one of those terrible things that happened in those days. Anyway, after 2 or 3 days, I was released. But obviously, there was no question of me going back to that situation, because again, I'd probably be now criticized and accused of having given a few more names and revealed a few more secrets about the local organization, because I did know something about this. And there was a group of volunteers, or Chetniks, in Svrljig there. There was a company there, again.
These would have been led by Mihajlović, would they?
It was Nedić. It was Nedić. Because Nedić and Mihajlović were not strictly working together, because, you see, although Nedić and Mihajlović worked together, and Nedić was sending millions and millions of, you know, dinars to Mihajlović, and ammunition and uniforms, and also everything that was possible without endangering, you know, the predicament of his own administration. But the Germans knew that this was going on. But of course, you know, when they caught some people, I mean, that was, you know, imminent death. But Nedić was trying to do it as cleverly as possible. So on the face of it, there was no contact between them. In fact, there was a very, very important contact, and there were people working through all sorts of channels, and especially trying to help. And also, you know, they had their liaison offices in Belgrade and in various other places, so that they knew what was happening. But Nedić was our, you know, sort of official leader, and the Dobrovoljci, or Chetniks, who were, there was a company of them there in Svrljig, and so I enlisted there, and that was it. And so from there on,
What the volunteer force was? This would be the sort of royalist, wouldn't it? Loyal to the... Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah. Well, you see, when the first organization was set up, And the only force to fight the communist partisans who were becoming stronger and stronger, and they were getting stronger, there were small police detachments. These were people, ordinary people, as you know, not much education, no ideology. They were just doing a job, you know, being a policeman. There would be a few of them here, you know, this police station, a few of them a few miles away, 10, maybe 15, maybe fewer. The partisans would often come, surround them, take their weapons, take their uniforms. Some of them shot, not many, but some of them. Others told to go home, either mobilized by them or told to go home and to watch their steps. So they were not an effective force. And it was about this time when somebody suggested that what you need here, that suggested to Nedić, what you need here is, you know, you really need a kind of ideological force. This is an ideology. And you've got to have people who know something about it and who are prepared to fight as ideological, you know, fighters. And the only such force was this movement, which Ljotić started a few years ago, which was nationalist, profoundly royalist and monarchist. But they knew communism for what it was. And the appeal was issued to those people to come, to volunteer. That's why they were called volunteers, to fight. And they were all students or secondary school students, you know, grammar school students with no experience of military or otherwise. There were a few officers, you know, people who had been either active or on the reserve list, but most of them just ordinary people in their late teens or early 20s. Most of them late teens. And they came and they formed a few of such detachments. They were given some very few rifles. I mean, the Germans, you see, wouldn't give away weapons because they knew the weapons would be passed on to Mikhailovich. So everything was made as difficult as possible. Now, you save your own skin if you can, but we are not going to give you much help. So they had a few weapons, but they were very limited, very primitive.
So what was the relationship between this group and the Germans? Because I think that must be established, don't you, from what happened?
The relationship was here to the extent that Nedić was a German slave and he was under their command, that the same would apply to volunteers and Chetniks, you know, because you're not in your own country. You're a slave. And Ljotić said to Germans, and Nedić said, we are slaves. You're not going to do anything against our people. You can do what you like with us. But if we can, as long as we can, we are going to save, you know, what we can save from our unfortunate and miserable people, which is being massacred. Now, this was the kind of situation.
So you were protecting the Serbian people?
We had to stop this. You see, what the partisans did was, they would come, they would provoke the Germans, they would come to a particular place with reprisals, they would kill tens or hundreds of people, burn the village, take some hostages. The partisan would be sitting not far away, rejoicing, and said, worse it is there, the better it is for us. They were, by doing this, they were forcing people to flee their homes and to go and join their units, and many did, and many did. In one place, and I mentioned that in my book, when they came, the Germans have ruined the place, killed hundreds of people. When the Germans had gone, still smoldering ashes, the partisan unit came and gathered around those remaining few survivors. They started singing and dancing. They forced them to dance on the ruins of their homes, over the bodies, or, you know, burned bodies or unburied bodies of their dear ones. This was the kind of situation. Now, what would you do in that particular predicament? You don't worry about the Germans, you know, because Ljotić and Nedić knew that the Germans would be here a few years and they would be gone. No occupation had lasted so many years except the communist occupation. But he said, we've got to do something. The communists, if they do come, they will stay here for a very, very long time, perhaps forever. And this was one of the basic tenets of their philosophy. Said, we've got to forget about the Germans. We are not, all right, we are their slaves, they are our masters, we can't do much about it. We can't fight them. But one thing they made perfectly clear, we are Serbian royalists, we are wearing Serbian uniform, royalist uniform. Our commander, he was the adjutant to the late Queen Marie, that was the Serbian officer's uniform. We are having our Serbian royalist banners. We are fighting for the king and the freedom and for our faith. We are not having any truck with, you know, what you're planning. I mean, like the Croats, the Pavelić sent thousands of his ustashes to fight in a distant front. Nedić and Ljotić resisted, said, we are not here, we are not going to send one of our people anywhere else. What we are trying to do is here to try and save our massacred nation. Oh yes, that's why they called us collaborators, yes. Oh yes, you had the Germans. But what can you do? How can you do, right? If the communists did this kind of thing to us, they would come and provoke. People would be massacred. People would be taken hostages. People would be shot, simply because they happen to be in that particular group, not because they're guilty of anything. The communists never, or partisans, never came to fight seriously, with a few exceptions, because they were planning at the same time to establish the communist state. Now, I told you that towards the end of November in 1941, Mihailović and Tito came together and they fought. And there were some battles, and the Germans were made to retreat from, you know, a few towns, and they formed this republic. This was supposed to be sort of great liberating war between two different groups, Chetniks and communists or partisans. But of course, that was what appeared to be the case. What in fact happened was, as soon as one particular village or place was liberated, or so-called liberated, the communists would engineer so that the local committee set up, which was supposed to be set up jointly, you know, power to be shared between the two groups, they would usually either take it all completely or make sure that the majority is in their hands. And so by various tricks and deviations and manipulations, they managed to get rid of all those who were not of their persuasion. So they would then do what they like, and they started putting into practice their communist doctrines and communist ideology. And that really was what brought this unhappy collaboration between them to a speedy end. Mihailović realized, well, these are not people that we can work with. They are not fighting for the benefit of our people. They are fighting for their own political and ideological interests. Therefore, you know, soon after that, there was fight between them. The partisans attacked some Chetnik units, although they were still allies, and they disarmed them, and some of them were killed. And so, from then, there was no more sort of good relationship between them. In fact, fight to the end.
Did you know anything about the sort of allied attitude towards Mihailović?
Oh, yes.
And how this changed to Tito, you know, later
oh, yes,
in the war? Because I'm wondering how that would have affected you,
Well, psychologically. Well, Mikhailovich at that time was the minister of war in the royalist government, which was in London. Well, Cairo first, you know, in the Middle East, but then, and then in London, based on London.
And were you kept informed of all
this?
Oh, yes,
of course we knew all this. We had contacts. We had one of our people, he was Ljotic's personal secretary. He's in the States now, in Milwaukee. I saw him there a few years ago.
I was wondering, you know, psychologically, what that did to you, you know, when the Tito was backed.
If I can just finish this.
Oh, sorry, yes. Mm.
He went on several missions to Turkey. Ostentatiously, he was there as a buyer to buy some cotton wool because we needed, you know, cotton wool for, you know, to make uniforms. The Germans wouldn't provide anything. The Germans imprisoned many of our friends. They imprisoned Mushitsky and kept him in a camp for months. And he wasn't, you know, they were suspicious all around. So I mean, you had enemies all around. You're accused of collaboration, but you. You're treated as their worst enemy because they knew that we were determined. And when these first volunteer groups were formed, they had their early fights with the communist detachments, early